Welcome to Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius, your source for horror, sci-fi, suspense, and all things violent.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. This is episode 56. Today, we will be sharing chapter 3 of the Ain't No Messiah audiobook. If you didn't hear last week's first two chapters, go back to episode 55, turn in at the 12-minute mark, and you can check out those two chapters. I'll be sharing a chapter every week. Right now, the audiobook is going through quality assurance with ACX. That may take a little while. So, this is a chance for you guys to check out this audiobook before anyone else hears it. So, exclusive, premiere, whatever the hell you want to call it. I think Rick Cheddar did an amazing job with all the voices, the accents. He may do the voice for all five books. I'm not sure if I'll go with a different narrator for each one. But right now, yeah, I'm super happy with it. I'm also going to see if he can do Beyond Brightside, which I am working on cleaning up right now. I think that one should be finished within about 2 months. Yeah, probably about 2 months I'll finish up that book. We'll start on the... do a final edit on it, then we'll start the narration process. Ideally that one will be out later this year. What I'm super excited about is the Train Not to Die series. John Palisano, who's doing Train Not to Die in the Pandemic, which is going to be book 3, is kicking butt. He's already got over 10,000 words on it. He's also going to do Train Not to Die in the Wild West. That's just the working title. I'm not sure what we're going to actually call it, but... so that'll be exciting. We have Armand's Dying Days, a zombie one coming up. We haven't even started that one. That will be out next year. Just looking forward to it. But another one that should be developed relatively fast that we just decided on is Try Not to Die in 25 Perfect Days. I'm going to be doing that one with my daughter, which is awesome. She just finished reading the book right now in her writing classes, which take place at, right now we're doing them at 12:30 every day, Pacific Standard Time. If you guys want to try to learn about writing, if you have any specific questions, you can ask me and I'll answer them on there. You can see how I develop a short story, how I develop a Try Not to Die with another person, trying to pull the story out of them. And if nothing else, it's a chance to see me interact with my daughter. I think that's awesome. That's the main reason I'm even doing it. But this with this Try Not to Die, it'll be Try Not to Die in 25 Perfect Days. It's going to be an extension of the book. It'll be first person. You know, every couple pages that you have to decide what's going to happen. So it's not going to be a very long book. These are all about 45,000 words. But it'll be a cool little way to jump back into that universe and expand it. So that's what we're going to be doing. And I also spoke with my friend Steve Montgomery. He had been working on a book a couple years ago. But it was before I realized I wanted to make all these YA, and his hero was a little bit too old, and it was too big of a story for this small format. So I had some ideas on how we could rework it, but with everything going on with the pandemic and just life, we just hadn't talked. But I talked to him yesterday. He has free time now. He's stuck at home. He's motivated. Very, very smart guy, very creative, very artistic. I like the way his brain works. And so we had a really cool talk. I'm pretty sure we're going to do Try Not to Die Super High. I thought it'd be interesting to do one with cannabis. So even though it is young adult, I mean, that's a subject matter that teens deal with all the time. I was smoking at 15. So it's not going to be a glorification of marijuana whatsoever, but it will definitely be in the story. So we are going to start developing that. Not sure what's going to happen in the story yet. So he's brainstorming right now. We talked a lot on the phone yesterday. Hopefully sparked a lot of ideas. But he's going to give me who he thinks his main character is, where the location is, what the main event is. And from there, I'll just kind of help guide him a little bit. Like, yeah, man, let's do it. And then we'll start producing that one as well. So there are a lot of things in the works, which is cool. It makes it exciting for me, fun for me, and really looking forward to it. Not too much else going on, just here with the kids. Oh, I've been playing a shitload of Harry Potter. We have a card game that my son loves. It's supposed to be 11 years up and older, 11 years and up, but he's only 6, but he loves it. He's kicking butt. I think yesterday we played for about 4 hours. Maybe it was only 2 to 3, but it felt like 4. But no, it's a lot of fun, so that's cool. It's good to see that he's enjoying this time. And really at his age, you know, his teacher said, as long as he's reading, and like that's the most important thing, being read to and reading. And but this guy, even like in the card game, he's reading all the cards out loud. He's getting plenty, like he's going to be fine. So more than anything with him, just keeping him active, keeping him, you know, we're doing a lot of exercise together and just having a lot of fun. So it almost feels like it's just a really long summer vacation with him. For my daughter, it's a little bit harder because she's older and has to do her classes. But again, it's a cool thing. Oh, I'm also about to start a 10-week challenge, a German challenge with Anya. I forget what the actual website is, but she's pretty famous. She has a big following for, she teaches German and different languages. But this will be a 10-week learning German course. I figure since I'm home, I might as well push myself a little bit. I've been practicing for a long time, but I've never taken the time to actually do a course. I've just been doing apps here and there, so I haven't done a lot. But I think this will be the next step in improving that, challenging myself. And then with my daughter, she wants to learn guitar. She sings all the time, but she also wants to pick up an instrument. So together we are going to be, we're doing a little bit on Musician. That's the app that I use for that. But I realized I also have an account with Jamplay, and where you can do the actual courses that are taught by an instructor. And I think we're going to learn a lot faster doing that. I can actually fix all the things that I've been doing incorrectly and learn good technique instead of just trying to play songs and get better on my own. So that is what's going on with my family. Hopefully you guys are doing all right. Hopefully you're not too scared, panicky, all that good stuff. If you are, like, talk about it. Don't hold it in. I think it's important to really, you know, examine your fears. And when you say them out loud, sometimes they don't seem so bad, especially if you have someone to talk to them about. But that's on you guys to deal with. I got my own shit to deal with. But anyhow, I'm going to go expel my demons with my writing. That's how I get rid of those feelings that I'd rather not have that are, you know, maybe, I think a lot of us maybe don't acknowledge those feelings, or we just bury them like, oh no, everything's cool. I'm fine. It's like, no, you're not. You're worried. You're scared. You're whatever else. It's all right. It's all good. Just part of being a human. Anyhow, hope you guys are doing okay and that you enjoy this audiobook. So again, chapter 3 of the Messiah audiobook. If you haven't listened to the first two chapters, go back to the last episode, episode 55, and turn to the 12-minute mark. You can hear those two chapters, then listen to this one. Every week, I'm going to play the next chapter. All right, guys, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you later. Peace.
Chapter 3. There were always kids at church, but hardly a one spoke to me. Most of them went to school at Westerlog Elementary. We'd drive by it when we went to the Piggly Wiggly for groceries. The boys were always running around like wild animals, swinging from the monkey bars and chasing the girls with carefree abandon, something I longed for. "Maybe I should go here," I said one afternoon. Father's head whipped to the right, the huge wave in his hair swaying with him. "You learn everything you need from the lost Gospels. Last thing you need is some woman who can't get a husband trying to scramble the only message that matters." I could ask some of them to church. "You don't worry about that. We're fine. Plus, I wouldn't leave you with those little demons in a million years. Word's out on you, son. One of them is going to want to prove himself liable to take your head off. We can't have that, and I don't even want to think about what your mother would do." I hadn't considered the whole head chopping off thing, but it fit neatly into Father's stories. With no reason to not believe him, I apologized, swore I'd never ask again. Even though I might have been dumber than most everyone, I wasn't so dumb I didn't notice it. I saw the faces when I went to speak, and before long I stopped speaking pretty much altogether, except to Mother, who wasn't much of a talker herself. Sometimes she'd talk about the weather. "Getting hot." "Yeah." "Hotter than yesterday." "Yeah, I think so." Other times she'd asked if my food was warm enough. "I can put it on the stove." "No, it's fine."
"You sure?"
"Yeah." Mostly she'd just sip her tea and stare at the wall. Even when she'd say something, she'd barely look at me. A
A few nights she just got up from the table and wandered off without saying a word. During his service, Father would talk about the darkness we carry around in our souls. Most of the people thought he was talking about them, but I knew he was talking about Mother. She'd just sit on the couch, her eyes glazed, looking at nothing. It was like she was peering through the wall into some other world in some other dimension. One morning, she wouldn't get up. Father was waiting in the car. We were fixing to drive across town to hand out pamphlets, but she just wouldn't move. "Mother, come on, he's waiting." She shook her head, her eyes all watery. Finally, Father came in. "What in the hell is the holdup?" "I don't think she feels well." "Well, she never does. Now get." He pulled her by the arm, and she just flew right past him, doubled over and heaved. I'd never seen that much puke in all my life. Then the blood came pouring out between her legs. Father yelled at me, "We're going to the hospital." Until this moment, Father viewed medical centers as the modern-day Tower of Babel, man's wicked desire to remove God from the equation of life and death. But there he was, racing to the hospital, begging the nurses and doctors to fix his wife. She was almost green. Her eyes were slits, pupils jittering back and forth like she'd been taken by the devil himself. They wheeled her away and left Father and me with the other nervous people in the waiting room. A little kid crawled around picking up old Cheetos and shoving them between his lips. "Go sit down," Father said. I thought he might join me, but he just kept pacing and peering down the hallway. Mother had been emotionally bad for a while, but I'd never seen her sick. Even when Father got the flu, she never so much sniffled. She was just one of those people with a good immune system. I think that's why Father was losing his mind. Mother was his rock. And now she was dying.
"Sir, you need to step away from the desk," the nurse said.
"I want someone to tell me what's going on. Why can't someone tell me?"
"Sir, they're doing everything they can. So you just need to sit and try to remain calm. Think of your son," she said with a pointed look in my direction.
Father finally came over, plopped down next to me. He wiped at his cheek, and I saw things were worse than bad because just as Mother never got sick, Father never cried. The little boy on the ground held up a Cheeto, offered it to me. His mother said, "Wayne, get off the dirty floor and don't stick that in your mouth." Wayne was already chomping away. She grabbed his head, but he swallowed fast. Father got up, started for the nurse, but changed course and headed straight into the restroom. The nurse called over the mother and Wayne. They disappeared through the doors. All that was left was the TV in the corner, a tool of the devil I'd only seen seconds of. A man and a woman talked behind a desk while their own television played behind them. The small screen had big explosions and men with guns. A toilet flushed, and Father walked out of the bathroom. He took one look at me and said, "What's going on?" I turned left, then right, couldn't find an answer anywhere. "You better not have been watching that." "I'm just sitting." Father had no patience for me and made sure I knew it. My right leg had a hard time staying still, so he gave it a swat. The nurse and doctor came out, their voices low and hushed when they spoke to Father. "Oh, dear Lord," Father's hand flew over his mouth. "No, are you serious?" The nurse nodded with a smile. "Is she going to be okay?" The doctor said, "She'll need a complete bed rest, no movement at all for the next 3 months." Father pinched his bottom lip with his thumb and forefinger. "But we're going to have a baby?" I'd never seen Father's eyes so wet and wide. "If you stick to the orders I'm given, and you're going to need a full-time nurse to help with the medication and general care. Do you have insurance?"
"No."
"Well, there are options. Nurse Amanda will provide them. I'll leave you two to discuss." "Wait, doctor, can I see her?" "In a few minutes. She's just finishing up some blood work."
"Thank you, doc. Thank you."
Father threw his arms around the doctor. The nurse brought Father behind the desk into a little office. They walked in, Father not even turning back to see if I was still there. The doctor wouldn't let us leave until the middle of the night. We drove home in the dark, just about the only car on the road. Mother kept her hand over her belly,
gently stroking herself. She was 6 months pregnant, but hardly looked it. She was pretty much her frail self, with a bit of a bulge. Father kept asking if she was okay, if the window being down was bothering her. I'd never seen him this nice. He reached out and held her hand. When we got home, Father helped her from the car and into the wheelchair he'd gotten from the hospital. He rolled her to the room and made her a sandwich and some tomato soup. He told me to go to bed hungry. The next day, a nurse showed up with IV bags and a bunch of prescriptions. She showed Father how to replace the bags and move Mother to keep her from getting bed sores. I never thought a bed could hurt you. After the nurse left, I sat outside my parents' room and listened to them talking. "How are we going to pay for this?" Mother asked. "We'll find a way. God will show us." "But what if he doesn't? Our services don't bring in enough. We'll lose all the money we'd make from bacon." "Then we'll travel. Move outside the area." "Charles, I can't leave," the doctor said. "I know what the doctor said." It kind of made me happy to hear Father yell. "Look," he said, sounding almost remorseful for his outburst, "we just need to grow our flock. We'll have money. We can do it."
"But I can't be here alone."
"Well, we'll get Miss Durrington from up the road. She just sits around doing nothing anyway."
"I'm not putting this on Mrs. Durrington. Plus, she smokes 100 cigarettes a day."
"We'll find someone else. What about your sister?"
"Absolutely not.
She's family, and you know she'd do it."
I said, "No, we're not having this conversation."
But it wasn't over. Father and I were going to drive to Florence to drum up members. Mrs. Durrington stopped by to watch Mother, but the stench of that old woman sent Mother puking all over her blankets. Father tried to get a few old ladies from our church to help watch over her, but the women all had families and kids, and the scheduling was, well, it was impossible. We could only travel when someone was there to watch her. Not that it made any difference. No one from the other cities had seen or heard about me getting hit by that truck. We just stood on the street with pamphlets and Father's words. People pushed past us. If they did take a pamphlet, it'd be on the ground within 2 steps. Father didn't want to waste them, so I picked up the ones that didn't have too much dirt or oil smeared on them. One afternoon, I saw him eyeing a delivery truck rolling past us. I could tell he was thinking about throwing me in front of it. I ran up to a woman and handed her a pamphlet. "I've returned from heaven," I said. She smiled and took the brochure. She didn't even throw it away, at least not where we could see her. When we stopped for gas on the drive home, Father called Mrs. Durrington to remind her to check on Mother. Apparently, she already had, and she'd found her crumpled in the hallway. Mother had been trying to go to the bathroom and collapsed. Father and I drove straight to the hospital where the doctors had gotten Mother stabilized. For the first 10 minutes, they couldn't even find a heartbeat, but then it started thumping. They'd saved the baby, but if something like this happened again, they warned, she'd lose the child and maybe even her own life. That night, Father started getting his visions again. Said he was going to have the strongest boys in the entire world. He dreamed we'd one day usher in God's return and that the kingdom of heaven would rise from the ashes of this wickedness. "He'll be Cain and you'll be Abel," Father said to me over breakfast. I knew Abel was the one who died. "Why can't I be Cain?" I asked. "Eat your eggs." When Mother was finally released from the hospital, she arrived with a whole new stack of bills. Father put his foot down. The next day, Mother's sister, my Aunt Laura, arrived. I'd been clearing rocks from the front yard that doubled as the church's parking lot when the tiny brown car zoomed up the driveway, kicking up a cloud of dirt. For a second, I feared it was going to keep going and smash through the church. But it whipped to the right and parked up against the trees, a surprising disappointment. The driver's door opened, and a lady wearing a white blouse and blue jeans stepped out. Her blonde hair went past her shoulders, and she had on the kind of red lipstick Mother said was for trollops and harlots. Her blue eyes locked on mine. Without hesitation, she walked up and knelt, threw her arms around me. Her fingers were hot and sticky on the back of my neck. She smiled through the tears rolling down both cheeks.
"Hello, Joshua."
When we'd left the commune, I was obviously too young to remember her voice or what she looked like, but there was something strangely familiar about her. She smelled like blueberries and that tangy scent of sweat.
Her hand held my cheek. I'm so glad to see you. I never thought I'd... I'm your... Her eyes caught something over my shoulder. The flash of fear said it was Father.
Joshua, why don't you get your aunt's suitcase?
I said, yes, sir, but just stood there. She smiled at Father, but not nearly as nice. Hi, Charles. He slapped the back of my head. Now!
For the next week or so, I probably spent 30 seconds alone with Aunt Laura. Every time we found ourselves in the same room, Father would pop in and whisk one of us away. He had me doing chores like mowing the lawn or cutting firewood. He had Aunt Laura washing clothes, making lunches, and washing Mother's feet. Sometimes I'd hear Aunt Laura talking to Mother, or rather trying to. Mother never said a word. I didn't understand it. Mother hardly ever talked about her sister, but I got the feeling she really hated her, probably because Laura had a prettier face. And she definitely didn't like the way Father laughed at Laura's jokes, or all the times he touched Laura's arm, even though she always pulled it away. When Father wasn't bugging her, Aunt Laura's icy blue eyes were always on me. She could be doing dishes or taking a sip of her tea, and it was like I was the only thing that existed on this earth. It was sort of nice, but really weird, too. It was as if she was peering into my head, trying to silently to tell me something with that penetrating gaze. Father had always said Laura was nuts and mean, too. He said she'd been locked away at the commune for hurting people. I didn't see how that was possible. She was always smiling in our house, even as she was cleaning Mother's bedpan. Although she couldn't bake anything worth selling, Laura was a decent cook when it came to pancakes and eggs. She drizzled almost everything with butter or syrup and was always giving me seconds and thirds until Father saw I was putting on some weight. No one's going to believe in a fat messiah. It bothered her when he called me that. Not fat, but messiah. Her eyes would lower and she'd look so sad every time Father said it. There was something about her. Like she was holding on to all these secrets and she just wanted to let them out. It was as if they were killing her. I almost asked her a few times. I wanted to know so badly. One morning I was awoken by a sharp scream. Father said Mother had a nightmare and flopped off the side of the bed. When we finally got her to the car, I thought she was going to die. It was still almost 2 months before she was due. But at the hospital, the doctors said they had to take the baby out right then or risk losing them both. Father held her hand as they wheeled her into surgery. It was just Aunt Laura and me in the waiting room, alone except for the nurse at the front desk. Aunt Laura put her arm around my shoulder, pulled me into her with a little squeeze. She's going to be okay. I started crying. I didn't actually think Mother was going to die or that the baby wasn't going to be all right. I just felt like something inside me broke. I'd always been told to keep it together, to stay strong, to project what the followers needed to see. But in Aunt Laura's arms, I was just a little kid, and I was free to do anything, so I kept crying. "Oh, sweetheart, come here." She kissed my head and whispered, "Can I tell you something?" "What?" "I think we should run away together, the two of us." And the tears stopped rolling. My breath clumped in my throat. "What do you mean?" "Let's get in the car and drive. We can live anywhere you want. It'll just be us, like we're meant to be." Her eyes were wild, a turbulent sea, the deepest blue you'd drown in and be happy about it, content with the fate. "Don't you recognize me, sweetie?" All those feelings of familiarity. "You know who I am, don't you?"
"No."
"You know it's true, Joshua. Don't lie to your mother." Her fingers dug into my shoulders as she pulled me closer. Her breath reeked of onions. "You know I'm your mother. You can feel it." "Get away. You're hurting me." "Maureen couldn't have a child. They needed me. So I gave birth to you. But now they have their own. So you and I can be together."
"Let go." I ripped free and tore off down the hallway. The nurse said I couldn't go in there, but I burst right through the doors. I heard Mother grunting and yelling. I followed the sound until I saw her legs in stirrups. Everything was dripping blood. Father had her hand. Her knuckles were white. It looked like she was crushing her fingers. Through the surgical mask, he said, "Breathe."
Mother's roar sounded like she was being torn apart. The doctor said, "Almost. Keep going." He pulled out this purple blob. Its face was all mushed and caked with goop. I'd have bet every nickel in a bank that the creature was dead or retarded. But when the doctor slapped its little butt, the creature cried. Seeing that angry little face tickled Mother something silly. She and Father took the child and gushed. I found myself drawn closer. "Is it okay?" "Of course he is," Father said. Speaking to my parents, the doctor said, "He's premature. We're going to have to put him in incubation." I stepped next to the bed and held up my hand. Mother helped give a tiny wave. "I'm sorry, but I need to take him," the nurse said. She carried him straight out the room, Mother's eyes already closing. Father said, "You did good." She gave a little nod. "Come on," Father said. "Let's let her get some rest." He put his hand on my back and guided me out of the room. "Is he really going to be all right?" I asked. "He'll be fine. What's his name?" "Paul." I like that. What I didn't like was seeing Aunt Laura in the waiting room doors. She was arguing with the orderly and nurse. "I don't give a shit," Aunt Laura yelled. "She's my sister and I'm going back." "What is going on?" Father said. I put on the brakes. "Don't. Let's just go back. She's crazy." "Crazy? Wait, what happened?" "Nothing." "Don't tell me nothing." His voice cut right through me. "What did she say?" "Please, let's go check on Paul." Father's eyes searched mine until he had his answer. He stormed down the hall. "I want that woman arrested." "Arrested? How dare you? You can't keep me from my son. She attacked my family. I did no such thing. I gave you a child." The orderly dragged her away. The nurse ran to a phone to call for more security. "Joshua!" Memories can be deceiving or sometimes not even there. One of the joys of head trauma. There isn't much I remember about Paul's first few years, just that he was usually inside with Mother and I was outside, limited to the backyard because Father forbade me to leave the property alone. Certain days, memories are clear as a saint's conscience. The opening day of the Church of His Son's school being a big one. It was 8 o'clock sharp, and I was a statue in front of the door staring at Mother's hand on the knob, the pale blue veins snaking up her forearm. Her other hand was holding Paul's. Even though he was too young to officially start school, we were dressed in the same black pants and white shirts buttoned to the top. Her precious little Paulie looked almost nothing like me, softer and more delicate all the way around. His shiny brown mane still thin and manageable. Not the matted blonde mess of mine. Mother tore through every Sunday, telling me it was my own fault for not combing it during the week. Footsteps hit the end of the driveway. I turned and saw the oldest Walker girl running for us. Mother grabbed the back of my head and made me face the front. She was looking right at the girl, her eyebrows pushed together in the middle, her hawk face ready to snap. Nearly out of breath, in the quietest voice, the girl said, "I'm so sorry I'm late. My daddy's car wouldn't work." "We don't make excuses, Patricia. Most everyone calls me Patty." "Is that your given name?" "No, ma'am." "Good, then. Patricia, I don't know how it was at your old school, but we have rules here. I will only go over each one once, so all of you listen up." Mother looked down at the four of us, sounding like Father. She said, "You will speak when spoken to. You will listen and learn. Do you understand?" After we each said yes, Mother opened the door and flicked on the fluorescent light pointed to the rectangular table in the back corner that we used for Sunday's pamphlets and collection basket. Now it held 4 yellow notepads. She had assigned our places. My seat faced the cross. Patricia was to my left, her long curly hair swept over her shoulder, covering the peach dress just like in church. David, next to her with his perfectly potted hair, his top 2 shirt buttons undone, directly across from me, was Paul's chair, but he wasn't in it. He was waiting for Mother to sit so he could stand beside her. Mother took her spot to my right beside the boarded-up window. She'd hung a green blackboard over it, which there were 3 numbers, a bunch of words beside them. "You may call me Miss Maureen or teacher or even ma'am, but that's it. These are your notebooks in which you'll write down your lessons." She handed each of us 2 pencils, starting with Paul and ending with me. "If you lose or break one, you will have to replace it. take care of your supplies or they will be taken away. Mother went on to say some other things, but I was staring at my pencil, the first one I'd ever been trusted with. She put her hand on top of mine. Pay attention. I put my hands on my lap and I promised as I would. Mother pointed at the board. Now, who can tell me what this says? David put his hand up, then Patricia, even Paul looked at it like he had a chance, but I kept my hand by my side. I knew all my letters, but that was about it. Words like dog and God were the only ones I spelled right. I couldn't even spell my own name. Got away with signing J because Mother was the one doing the grading. Mother called on David, and he sat up a little straighter, cleared his throat. His tone was smart and smug, and it sounded practiced, as if he spoke that way all the time. Number one, what is our purpose? Number two, who is the second coming of Christ? Number three, who will he save? She asked who knew one of the answers. All three of them raised their hands, so I did too. She called Paul first. Paul gave a big smile because he knew he'd be right and he was barely four. With a sweet little lisp that always made Mother smile, he said, "We're here to spread the good word. Let everyone know Christ has returned." Mother smiled her approval and then pointed, told me to answer the second question, but I was thinking about the third one and said, "Anyone who believes?" David laughed, and so did Paul. Mother pointed behind me at the table on the other side of the aisle that we'd put in for the bakery display, an hour of smelling fresh cookies ensuring a sellout after every mass. "Go," she said. "School is no place for jokes." I wasn't joking. "The Messiah should have his own space. Get over there." I pushed back my chair and got up. "And take your things." I picked up the notebook and pencils. Mother's eyes said she was done, staying on me for a second, then up to the heavens with a shake of her head. She used her slow voice when she wanted my attention. "Joshua, grab a chair and sit down at that table. Now." I wanted to turn my back on them and face the wall, but I knew Mother would yell. She never did that before Paul. But like I said, things had changed. I sat down, barely able to see the blackboard, not that it mattered. The rest of the day I didn't say a word, and Mother never asked me to. It seemed like forever, and all I had to show for it was a page I'd covered in crosses. Long ones, short ones, fat ones, thin ones. Not a single one with a man nailed to it. The egg timer dinged, and Mother put down her book. "Pencils on the desk, notebooks closed, everyone rise for dismissal." I stood with the rest of them and got nervous when Mother called my name. "Yes, ma'am." "Every day at the close of class, you will lead us in prayer. Understand?" All of a sudden, I was back on stage, my heart thudding so hard I could barely swallow. "Which one?" "The true Nicene." I just looked at her. She must have known I couldn't say it. So I didn't look dumb. Mother spoke to the others. "Joshua will say, Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ has come again, and you will say amen." I stalled. "Can you say it once more?" The look on Mother's face made sure I'd never ask again. That look wasn't annoyance or frustration or even fear. If I suspected it before, I was certain now that woman did not like me. Paul said, "I can do it." "Someone has to," Mother said. Paul did it perfectly, and we all responded. Mother spoke to the class but looked right at me. That wasn't so hard now, was it? Paul didn't spend much time outside and never without an adult, but Mother said she'd make an exception because he'd proved himself in class. Plus, now that half her day was taken up with school, she had less time in the kitchen and couldn't get all the bacon done with Paul underfoot. I promised I'd watch him. He promised he wouldn't do anything dumb. We changed into our cords and white t-shirts, barefoot since neither of us had shoes we could afford to ruin. Paul was too tiny to climb trees, and most likely he'd tell on me if I did, so I took him over to the swamp side of the church where there were always interesting rocks. I was looking for rocks with just the right weight. Paul only wanted ones that were shiny. I went past the pines where the ground got squishy, snapping off branches I could reach, not about to let one stab us in the eye or rip a shirt. Paul sat down on a fallen pine father would sell as firewood.
You like school?
I kept on walking. Maybe I wasn't the smartest guy, but I knew he was a parrot. He didn't budge. Looked like he might cry.
Hold on a sec.
I did, but just because the swamp was a stone's throw away and we were real close to the side of the church, we were never allowed in ever since I asked Mother in class what F-U-C-K spelled. Paul pulled pine needles from his hair.
You mad at me?
I walked past him and headed toward the porch, breaking off branches and casting them down. He followed.
Why are you mad?
You know everything I know. Paul kept right behind me.
I could never know that much.
I emerged from the trees and crossed the driveway. Wouldn't even look at the church. I'm not all-knowing.
You're calling Father a liar?
Go inside, you little baby. Paul did the thing with his lower lip sucking as he chewed on it.
I'm not a baby.
Father's station wagon wasn't in the driveway and Mother was busy baking. I knew I shouldn't do it, that I wasn't being very son of God-like, but I stuck my foot out behind him, gave his chest a little shove, laughed as he crashed on the grass.
Then why are you taking a nap?
Paul popped up with a scream, his tiny face all scrunched up like a rabid weasel. I ran past the porch steps, Paul in hot pursuit. Ahead lay the hill of grass that stretched to the thick wall of trees we were forbidden to cross. Around the corner was the rusted burn barrel and a mound of dirt not far from the faded brown barn, another place we weren't allowed. I stayed close to the house, my arms and legs pumping, my feet barely touching the grass. When I was running, I wasn't the Messiah. I was just running, and I was good at it, especially compared to a four-year-old. Paul came tearing around the corner. Not far behind, I slowed a bit as I came upon Mrs. Hester's rusty red Plymouth parked in the back of the house. Mother drove it only when she had to, never sure if it would start. I checked over my shoulder and saw Paul about 5 feet away. I veered toward the car, spun around as I passed it, and threw open the front door. Paul hit it full speed with a loud clunk, then a cry, called me a jerk. I kept running. The plan to get in the back door and lock it, make Paul walk back to the front, teach not him to be such a goody-two-shoes. I rounded the next corner, headed for the back door, 4 strides away when I saw the dog, a massive black beast, its head lowered, onyx eyes on mine. All at once, everything stopped. My first thought was to keep going. I could make the back door, but I wasn't by myself. Over the sound of my pounding heart and rushing blood, I made out Paul shouting. I was a cheetah. I stood tall and made my voice deep as Father's. Down! The dog, which was barely as tall as me, kept growling but didn't move. Father shouted my name from somewhere, and I knew that Paul was still running. But all my focus was on the dog, my eyes on his, willing him to obey. I put both hands in the air, then brought them down. Louder than I shouted anything in my life, I said, Now! The dog quit growling, lowered its butt on the long grass. Paul came around the corner.
You cheater, you oh!
The beast charged Paul, its front paws flinging grass, its front teeth bared. Paul was turning tail, but he'd never make it. I don't remember leaping, but I'll never forget the collision. A train slamming into my chest, the air pounded out of me. My shoulders sank into the muddy grass, the side of my head smacking down, knocking my teeth together. I tried to get up, but I was pinned. I rolled onto my back, warm saliva dripped from above into my mouth. Paul screamed when the dog looked up. I grabbed fur and flesh and took hold of his chain collar. It twisted, trying to bite at my hands, the snarl in his throat shaking my fingers. The loudest whack filled my ears. The dog yelped, and so did I. Its claws shredded my shirt, sinking into my skin. The collar ripped free, and I covered my face. Snap, and my forearm was stuck in a vise, tightening, a row of nails puncturing the flesh. Father shouted, Shame! Another thunderous smack sent the dog scrambling on my stomach, pulling on my forearm. I screamed and pushed my arm and the dog's head into the air as a piece of wood broke into two across its snout. The dog hobbled away, left Father holding half the broom like a sword. Archangel Michael before the descent. I was trying to figure out if I was okay when Father threw down the broom. He jerked me to my feet and there was the sound of something breaking. A lightning bolt of pain shooting from Father's fingers wrapped around my collarbone. What the hell were you thinking? I couldn't think. My left hand was bloody from clutching my stomach. Two gaping holes pierced each side of my right forearm, a fire spreading across my shoulder. Father sent Paul inside and let go of me. Stop crying! I hadn't known I was crying, but I didn't care. It hurts. Then that's what you get for being so stupid. You have any idea what he would have done to you? The area between my neck and shoulder was warm and swollen. Father batted my hand off it. He would have torn your face, and then what? We'd lose everything. It was hard to speak with my teeth clenched, but I managed to say sorry. Father looked me over. Jesus, Joshua, you pissed yourself. My brown cords were wet, but the top half was blood. I said, the dog. Just go. Have your mother take care of you after she takes photos. Better send for Doc Hargrove, too.